The High School Years, written by Stephen Brown and Michael Alstrup, and directed by Dan Sticca.
A brisk, chilling wind is howling through the trees as the Chief Justice of the State Supreme Court steps forward to administer the oath of office to Governor-elect James Thomas Wheaton. He's come a long way from those days in Appleton. I've known Jimmy for over 30 years, ever since our days at Danforth back in the mid-70s. Now, this was not your ordinary Midwest prep school. It was the most elite prep school, well, as much as one can be in the Midwest. And Jimmy was, well, let's just say he was not like the rest of us. But I'm getting ahead of myself and better stop so James can take the oath of office from this Chief Justice of the State Supreme Court, who happens to be my older sister.
Governor-elect, please raise your right hand. Place your left hand on the Bible and please repeat after me. I, James Thomas Wheaton, do solemnly swear and affirm.
I, James Thomas Wheaton, do solemnly swear and affirm
that I will faithfully and impartially discharge and perform all the duties incumbent on me as governor.
That I will faithfully and impartially discharge and perform all the duties incumbent on me as governor.
And will, to the best of my abilities and understanding.
And will, to the best of my abilities and understanding.
Agreeably to the rules and regulations of the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution and laws of this state.
Agreeably to the rules and regulations of the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution and laws of this state.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Governor.
Thank you, Madam Chief Justice.
James, I'm so proud of you.
Today I have the honor of being sworn in as your governor and to continue to serve the state that has been my home for all of my life. I take this oath sustained and supported by my wonderful family and very dear friends. I want to thank the wonderful people of this state who have put their faith in me, and I am determined to affirm that faith. I remember, almost like it were yesterday, when I gave my high school acceptance speech as senior class president. When someone is elected to an office, it is essential that we become leaders and not followers.
We must also remember that we are held to a higher standard because we are leaders. I welcome that challenge and will never forget that I serve you, all of you.
As James, Governor Wheaton, continues his speech, I remember the first time I met James, when we were both at Danforth, where his father, Dr. Thomas Wheaton, was headmaster.
Mrs. Breckenridge, are you there?
There is no need to shout at me. I heard you the first time, Dr. Wheaton.
Why is my office so cold? And what do I have next?
I'll call Mr. Adams about the heat. And from when you asked me 30 minutes ago, before your boys' state meeting, nothing has changed. You have a noon lunch with Professor Spence, then James and the rest of the Student Senate leadership meets with you at 2.
Oh, really? Okay. Then send a note to James. He's in American Lit with Professor Hopkins. Cancel my appointment with the boys.
You did that last week. It's almost time for your lunch meeting. They'll be here when you get back.
Oh, very well. Thank you, Mrs. Breckenridge. Since Mr. Adams always seems to have free time on his hands, make sure he makes my office warmer before I return.
Danforth is one of those all-boys Midwest prep schools where their everyday uniform is made up of a dark blue blazer, gray slacks, a crisp blue shirt, button-down collar, dark blue tie with a maroon stripe. And who can forget those Weegians, you know, Cordovan penny loafers. We're now in Jeffrey Hopkins' American Lit class. James always sits in the first row, right-hand side.
It always comes down to passion and focus. Hemingway and even Steinbeck seem to have that same theme, and why is that? Who'd like to respond? Yes, Mr. Kennedy.
Characters always seem to be in conflict with no one to help bail them out. And don't you think the same themes are in Steinbeck's plays?
Well, that's what I'm asking you, Mr. Kennedy.
Respectfully, Professor, Hemingway is more about grace under pressure, while Steinbeck was a champion of the underdog, in a way that...
Ah, Mr. Wheaton, we were talking about the way the author's themes are similar.
True. I would also say they both write about different cultures adjusting to change. And, now that I think about it, in Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men, George and Lenny have a strange relationship, even up to the time that George kills Lenny.
Interesting analysis, as always, Mr. Wheaton, but why don't we move on? We do need to finish up this novel and get to the next one. I, of course, reserve the right to return to your literary analysis in the future.
Well, I don't know about being a literary analysis. When I read something, I always seem to think about a lot of unrelated things.
Yeah, but that's the trick, isn't it, Mr. Wheaton? To bring those supposedly disconnected bits together into some large mosaic at some point.
That is very true, Professor. In fact, I was wondering...
We will have to finish this discussion tomorrow, and also remember to read 451 before next Monday's class. And dismissed.
Sir?
Mr. Wheaton, class is over.
Yes, I know. Ray Bradbury is so intense, yet so subtle in how he says things. Every time I read Fahrenheit 451, I latch on to something new.
Every time? How many times?
How many times what?
How many times have you read it?
Three or four. Okay, four. Maybe even four and a half.
I look forward to hearing what you have to say about it next week. You do have another class right now, don't you?
No, we have a meeting with my father at 2:00. Student Senate. Too bad he didn't cancel again like he did last week.
Well, I will see you in class tomorrow. Hope your meeting goes well.
My father, the headmaster, never seems to be listening, but I, or rather we, try to explain things to him clearly.
I'm not sure I understand. In fact, I know I don't.
Oh, well, thanks, Professor. I'll see you tomorrow. I don't know either. Bye.
Even though there's snow on the ground, James joins his friends Zachary Lancaster and Ethan O'Hara sitting around a big elm tree outside the dormitory.
We need to make sure Dr. Wheaton fully understands just how important this is. Sorry, James, but he never seems to be listening when we talk to him.
I'm used to it, Zach, but we should never stop trying. Too many distractions for him. Maybe one day he'll understand.
James, you obviously know how to deal with him better than any of us. By the way, any of you going to Boise State?
I thought about applying, but, I'm not sure.
Why not, right, Ethan?
I don't know. I think my folks can't afford it. As it is, my dad has two jobs because my tuition here.
I haven't heard anything about their selection. Guess I'm not the one going.
Dr. Young told me yesterday that the selection committee was going to be meeting sometime this week. Only one student will be able to go.
Yeah, protocol, you know. You are the student senate president by only one vote. So I guess you'll be going.
I doubt I'll be going. By the way, James, try to get the temperature readings for the past week in the dorm. We need them for that meeting with your father.
I know. The numbers.
What do you mean?
He likes to see facts and figures. The numbers. I already have all the information we'll need.
Good.
As Mrs. Breckenridge continues typing a letter for Dr. Wheaton, she doesn't even look up when James and Zach enter the outer office area for the headmaster.
Where are the cookies? Forgot them today?
It's Wednesday.
And?
No cookies for students on Wednesdays. You know, I bet one day someone will do some research on that one.
On what? Being nice to students?
Your father will be back shortly.
Oh, so you're going to be that way about it, huh?
Any messages for me, Mrs. Breckenridge? And did Mr. Adams take care of my office on his busy schedule and turn up the heat in my office?
Florence Chadwick called, and we'll be out again tomorrow. Guess we'll have to cancel her English literature class again. And yes, Mr. Adams was here to take care of the problem.
Give me a few minutes, boys. I have one telephone call to make. Mrs. Breckenridge, could you please get Congressman Bass on the phone for me? He's expecting my call.
Yes, sir. Right away. He still doesn't know how to use our new telephone system.
Yeah, I know.
Please come in, boys.
Thank you, sir.
Now, what can I do for the future leaders of the free world?
Dr. Wheaton, we are concerned about the living conditions in the dormitory.
Just what is the problem, Mr. Lancaster?
Sir, there are a number of major areas that need to be addressed. No hot water in the morning. The rooms are too hot in the winter. Everyone has their windows open.
How do you know these facts?
We took readings of the room temperatures to show you the problem.
We took the temperature readings every day for a week. We were consistent on what time of the day we took them. 8 in the morning, at noon, and in the evening at 10. The numbers are accurate.
Have you filled out a building complaint form with Mr. Adams?
Many times, sir, and nothing has changed.
I'll look into that. And what's next on your list?
Excuse me, sir.
What is next on your list, Mr. Lancaster?
The members of the Student Senate would like you to come to our meeting in 2 weeks. It's been a long time since you attended a meeting.
Yes. I would like to remind the boys of why we exist. Our motto, truth and courage, is more than mere words.
Yes, sir. And I'm sure they will appreciate your time.
I'll check with Mrs. Breckenridge. She handles my calendar of appointments. Anything else in your file folder?
That is all for now. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Lancaster, can you stay a moment? Thank you, James, for coming in. I'll see you at home tonight.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Lancaster, I am very proud of your fine academic record here at Danforth.
Sir?
Mr. Lancaster, the boys' state selection team was here this morning, and you have been chosen to represent Danforth. You are going to Ripon this summer.
That's great, Dr. Wheaton. I don't know what to say.
They wanted someone who has the passion for learning combined with outstanding leadership skills. That is you, young man. Congratulations, Mr. Lancaster. Danforth will be represented well.
Thank you, Dr. Wheaton.
Oh, and please don't say anything until Friday. I want to announce it at our monthly breakfast meeting.
I won't say a word about it.
That is all, Mr. Lancaster.
Hey, Zach, so what was that about?
Nothing. Your dad just wanted to tell me more about Danforth's mission.
Oh, you mean, we expect of ourselves the courage to be truthful, to deal with one another with honesty and mutual respect, and to embrace people who may be different than ourselves with compassion and understanding.
Yes, that's exactly what he said. Your father is quite serious about all of that.
Oh, yes, how well I know. When the governor stayed at our home back in August, my father recited that and more. So, yes, I know.
Okay, well, guess I'll see you later. I gotta get to my next class.
As James and Zach leave the headmaster's office, Mrs. Breckenridge is typing a letter for Dr. Wheaton. She reads a few lines ahead of each line she types. It says,
thank you for your selection recommendation. After careful thought, I officially and respectfully submit to you the name of Zachary Lancaster, who is our student Senate president. Even though your first choice was my son James, I believe Mr. Lancaster will represent Danforth well and will enjoy meeting the governor in Ripon. James, are you still here?
Oh, yes, ma'am, I am.
So you are. See you at the prayer breakfast on Friday, then.
Mrs. Breckenridge pulls the finished letter out of the typewriter, reads it over, and shakes her head in disagreement. She then puts the letter in a file folder and puts it in her top desk drawer.
Baby, you're no good.
A few days later, a group of boys, including Anthony Scalera, are talking when James walks up to them.
Anthony, hey, have you seen Zachary today?
Last time I saw him was late last night.
He was on the telephone. Seemed upset. That's all I know.
Well, we met with my father yesterday about the problems in the dorm. I'll talk to Mr. Adams today about our complaints.
James, you don't even live here. I'm sure your house is all the hot water in the world.
Oh, we do. You don't think the headmaster would have it any other way, do you?
Yeah, but I don't understand. Why do you really care about any of this?
Well, you voted for me as your senator. Maybe not as president, but I'll eventually get over that. Anyway, it's my duty, and it's the right thing to do.
You know, when I first met you, I thought you were just a snobby, smart kid whose father is headmaster. Now you're just a kid whose father's in charge.
Yeah, well, come on, Anthony. Let's try and find Zachary.
James, you're home a bit late, aren't you?
Yes, sorry. I was helping some friends look for Zachary.
Zachary Lancaster?
Yes. How did you know?
His father is very ill, so he had to catch an early morning bus to La Crosse.
I should call him. Maybe it's in the phone book, or I'll have to ask Mrs. Breckenridge tomorrow.
James, is the prayer breakfast tomorrow?
Oh, yeah, and I can't wait.
Now, I know you don't like them, but then neither do I.
Mom, have you ever told Dad that some people might be offended because they don't believe in what the chaplain says?
Your father doesn't like talking about religion. He and I barely talk about it. You know as well as I do that he has always refused to go with us to St. Timothy's.
He gets angry when he reads anything about the Pope. Well, I better call Mrs. Breckenridge and see if she has Zachary's number.
James is now at home, in the den. No lights are on, so it's a bit dark. He picks up a copy of Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451, which is on his dad's desk. As he thumbs through the book, an index card falls out, and James reads the section underlined.
You're afraid of making mistakes. Don't be. Mistakes can be profited by. Man, when I was young, I shoved my ignorance in people's faces. They beat me with sticks. By the time I was 40, my blunt instrument had been honed to a fine cutting point for me. If you hide your ignorance, no one will hit you, and you'll never learn.
Hello, William. Aren't you home early today?
Where's James?
He's in the den, trying to get Zachary Lancaster's telephone number.
Did you find Mr. Lancaster's number?
No, sir. I will have to ask Mrs. Breckenridge.
Too bad about Mr. Lancaster. He's a very smart young man. I guess that's why his fellow students chose him as their president of the student senate. James, it's too bad you have to set such a bad example.
In what way?
You ignored my wishes and tried to print that article in the student newspaper.
What? I didn't think you knew about the...
Of course, I know all about the article between those teen pregnancy problems. And you knew that you were forbidden to publish that article.
Well, the newspaper comes out tomorrow morning. I guess it's too late.
You have such a mouth on you. I know it's not too late.
What do you mean?
I just talked to Professor Hopkins and told him that he had to postpone the publication of this week's paper.
You mean censor the newspaper?
You can call it whatever you want. I just ordered Hopkins as advisor to the newspaper to pull it.
Oh, Ray Bradbury would love this one. 451 all over again.
I'm perfectly happy with this decision. In fact, censorship merely reflects my lack of confidence in some of the Danforth students.
No, you mean lack of confidence in me.
That's not what I said.
Oh, I forgot to mention this morning at breakfast that I will be going to the homeless shelter on Saturday. It's my day to volunteer.
I will never understand why you waste your time with those people. They need to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps.
It's the right thing for me to do. You might think so, too, if you went with me.
James, your smart mouth is not appreciated. How many times do I have to remind you that you are a guest at this school and should set a good example? You will never learn.
No, I have learned that helping other people can help them become more self-sufficient.
I have work to do. Is there anything else, James?
No, sir.
Please close the door as you leave. It's the next day, and James stops by to see Catherine,
Mrs. Breckenridge, I was hoping that you have...
Mr. Lancaster's telephone number.
How did you know that?
I know everything around here. Here's his number. You can use the other phone in the corner.
James takes that sheet of paper with the phone number and sits down next to the small table in the corner where the other phone is. As he begins to make his call, Mrs. Breckenridge takes the file folder out, which has the typed letter nominating Lancaster to Boy State. She takes the one-page letter and rips it up. She then begins typing a new letter.
Hello, Mrs. Breckenridge.
Hello, Dr. Wheaton.
Mrs. Breckenridge.
Yes, sir.
We need to send a new letter to Boy State.
Yes, sir, I know. James will be very excited about going to.
Yes, I'm sure he will be. Let's get that letter out today.
Yes, sir. I'll work on it right away.
James? No, substitute Zachary's name with David Kennedy. He's the perfect choice.
Why not, James?
He's way too immature, not ready.
Yes, sir. I'll do that right away.
Mrs. Breckenridge, I'll be back in about an hour, and I'll sign that letter when I get back.
Just as Dr. Wheaton leaves the office, James is standing at Catherine's desk.
Any luck in contacting Zachary?
Yes, he'll have to drop out for a semester. Too bad. He will be missed. I told him that I would help him. I could do whatever I can to help him.
I guess this means you will become acting president of the Senate?
Oh, yeah, but, only temporary. I'll just keep the seat warm for Zachary.
James, is there something else?
No. I think that's enough for one day.
What's next?
What do you mean?
What's next for you today?
Oh, do you always have to talk to me like a big sister? Like you're keeping tabs on me?
Only when you need a kick in your pants.
Thanks for letting me use the telephone. I'll see you later, Mrs. Breckenridge.
Fahrenheit 451 is by far Ray Bradbury's finest work. That's my own opinion, of course. The main means of suppressing free thought at issue is book burning, which represents a larger evil of censorship. James, a question?
Do you think the way Bradbury portrays the world is meant to serve as a warning?
What kind of warning?
A warning against the whole anti-intellectualism movement, as in what Hitler tried to do, or even like the whole McCarthy era.
Oh, James, you have really given this some thought. Bradbury strikes a chord a number of times, saying that books represent knowledge and awareness, like the forbidden fruit in the futuristic Eden.
Professor, what about making mistakes? How does that affect decision-making?
Well, Bradbury says if you're afraid of making mistakes, don't be. Mistakes can be profited by man.
Yes, but he also said that he shoved his ignorance in people's faces and they beat him with sticks.
James Bradbury pulls no punches when he says if you hide your ignorance, no one will hit you and you'll never learn. What does that mean to you, James?
I'm not sure exactly what he means, but I don't believe what he says about not being hit and never learning. I don't believe that for one minute.
Thank you, James. Tomorrow we'll talk about Bradbury's statement, there are no consequences and no responsibilities. We see that there are indeed many, many consequences. Class dismissed. James, is anything wrong?
No, sir. I'm just confused.
Oh, I'm sure you will figure it all out.
Yes, you're right. I'll figure it out. And if I make any mistakes, I will correct them until I make more.
James, I'm not exactly sure what you mean, but yes, you'll figure it out.
All of the students are seated in the chapel for the monthly prayer breakfast. Dr. Wheaton is standing on the high pulpit, which is on the left side of the chapel altar.
Good morning, students. This is our monthly food for your soul and direction for your spirit. We are here to receive all that is due to us. This morning we are honored with the presence of Pastor Timothy Harcourt from the Sherburne Church of Christ.
I can't wait to hear what the pastor has to say about the Pope.
Why should he? The pastor isn't Catholic.
No, but I am. Not that anyone here at Danforth really cares.
Dr. Wheaton steps down from the pulpit and shakes the pastor's hand as the pastor walks up. Dr. Wheaton then steps aside and sits in one of the large wooden chairs just to the side of the pulpit. Pastor Harcourt steps up onto the pulpit.
Young men of Danforth, we are all here today to renew our faith in God and in Jesus Christ. But what is faith? From where does each of us get that faith? Let us begin that journey this day and at this moment in time.
James, it's your father. He's staring right at you.
Hebrews chapter 11, verse 16 says, "But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him."
James, we haven't played chess in a long time.
We should. How about next Friday? Come on over to the house after classes.
Sounds fine to me.
Let's go back 2 weeks. The Wheatons are seated at the dining room table.
Sarah, Pastor Harcourt from Sherborne will be at this month's prayer breakfast. You should plan to be there. He is a marvelous speaker.
William, you know that I always volunteer at the local library on Friday mornings. I can't miss my day.
Oh, I know that you do. I was hoping you could give up just one Friday for Danforth.
William, we should not argue in front of the children, and we should never fight at the dinner table.
We're not fighting. I just think the boys would love to see you at the breakfast. Am I right, James? Jonathan?
Dad, you really don't know what we would like. Those prayer breakfasts do not feed my soul. They do not speak to me. I don't even understand the words or the feelings.
Then even more reason for you to be at the breakfast. You will be at the breakfast, and you will listen. You need to set an example for all the boys at Danforth and for Jonathan.
That's such a joke. James, don't even think about doing such a stupid thing like that.
You sit down this instant. You will not disobey me.
No, you will not do that to him or me. Never again.
We're now back in the chapel, where we were a few minutes ago. James is still staring up at the chapel ceiling as Pastor Harcourt continues to talk.
And so, we must never forget the words spoken in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 8 and 9. For by grace you are saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of God, not of works, lest anyone should boast. Let us remember these words and go forward in God's shadow and that of his Son, Jesus Christ. May God bless all of you. Amen.
Amen.
James is sitting at the desk in his room, working on a paper for his American literature class. With a knock on the open door, James' younger brother Jonathan is at the door.
Come in.
What are you working on?
It's my Fahrenheit 451 paper for Professor Hopkins' class.
Professor Loomis won't let us read that book. You know that?
I guess you'll have to wait until your junior year.
Tell me a bit about the story. I mean, what's the big deal?
Well, this is not the forbidden fruit, you know.
Yeah, I know. Tell me anyway.
All right, so let's talk about 451. It's set in the 24th century, and the story opens with a description of the pleasure that the protagonist, Guy Montag, takes in his profession as a fireman.
Why a fireman?
Well, that, my younger brother, is the crux of this story. See, the homes are fireproof, so the fireman's job is not to put out fires, but to start them, to burn books, and the houses where they are kept. You see, books, that is all books, are banned and are to be destroyed.
James, why do you think Professor Loomis bans the book in his class?
Well, remember when Dad and I had a fight over that article I wrote in our student newspaper? Yeah, that's why.
I don't understand. Why?
Because Loomis sees the book as being profane. The fire censors the knowledge and ideas that are in the books, just like what the headmaster tries to do with us and all the students at Danforth.
I wish I understood things the way you do.
Comes with age, little brother.
Even Dad doesn't think the same way you do.
So what's next on your list of questions?
The Seacrest Diner well known as a hangout for the whole community. Faculty members, staff, students, and local political leaders love this place. It is a typical 50s-like diner with lots of chrome and stainless steel decor. It's 8:30 in the morning. James is sitting in the back booth with papers strewn all over the table, several open books. He's drinking a vanilla shake, and there's a half-eaten donut on a plate next to the shake. An attractive young waitress approaches James' table, balancing a tray on her left palm and a coffee pot in her right hand.
Honey, are you doing okay?
Yes, I'm fine. I wish my assignment was going as well.
You just let me know if you need anything, sweetie.
Uh-huh, I will. Thanks.
James is totally unaware that Catherine Breckenridge has not only walked into the Seacrest, but is sitting across from him in the booth. She sits quietly, waiting to see just how long it takes James to notice her.
Mrs. Breckenridge, what are you doing here?
Dolores, I'll have my usual, along with coffee, black.
You got it, Kate.
Kate? What was that all about?
James, this isn't part of my usual Saturday morning ritual. Dolores always waits on me.
I've never seen you here. What are the twins and Mr. Breckenridge up to, then?
Andrew and Simon are raking leaves when they see Henry looking out the window at them. Otherwise, they're throwing the football when he's not looking.
A midterm paper is due on Tuesday in my U.S. government class.
Yes, I know. Poverty in America and its effects on government policy.
Is there anything you don't know about, Mrs. Breckenridge?
Yes, actually there is.
For instance?
How about how you are able to focus on your work and not let your father be a distraction? Tell me how that works.
What do you mean?
I believe you have some unfinished business with your father, don't you?
Like what?
You need to be more direct with him. You don't like conflict with your father, but that too will pass. James, are you still here?
Yes, I'm here. I was just thinking about my assignment.
I think not. You were contemplating on how to respond to my comment.
Oh, you're right, as usual. Do you talk to Andrew and Simon this way?
Yes, and also to Henry. It's my nature.
How do you do it?
Let's just say that I like to be analytical
and... What I mean is, how do you deal with my father? He's not easy. In fact, he's a real...
Well, remember when we first met? You said to give you numbers, and I did. Was I right then?
Yes, but numbers don't always tell the whole story.
This sounds more and more like one of Ford's press conferences. An answer to a question that hasn't been asked yet, and then a follow-up.
Where is this going? Maybe I really don't want to know.
James, you always land on your feet. So many people around here admire you, but they don't understand you.
Well, what's there to understand? I go to class, I study, I live with my parents. I'm just a simple guy.
But not with simple ideas. You see beyond what others see.
What are you doing? Why are you telling me all of this?
You have to listen to me. You need a life away from Danforth. The routine of things here bore you, don't they?
Oh, well, yeah, I guess they seem to at times. But then
think all the time. What do you want, James?
To be left alone. You don't talk to my father this way, do you?
Sometimes. But you're different. I've seen how you are always stopping to help your friends.
How do you know that? Are you spying on me, Catherine?
It's Mrs. Breckenridge. And no, I am not spying. I see things. Again, James, what do you want?
Like, in my life?
Yes.
Well, I've thought about maybe going into the priesthood.
And I want to go to law school and become a prosecutor. Have you told your dad?
Oh, you must be joking. He can't deal with a discussion about the new pope, let alone that.
What about college? Where?
Well, he wants me to go to Harvard or Brown.
And where do you want to go?
Madison. Or, you know, maybe Notre Dame. Any place other than where he wants me to go.
James, you'll end up where you want to be.
It's now the weekend. James is at home, and he and David Kennedy are sitting in large leather wingback chairs. A table sits between them, on which a chess set is in mid-game. James is hunched over the chessboard, studying it. David is sitting back in his chair, watching James very intently.
It's your move, James. Why do you take so long?
Strategy.
lack of planning and focus might be a better explanation.
David, you've been playing since you were 4, right?
Actually, 3. My grandfather was a chess master and ranked nationally.
He didn't read Dickens to you?
No, we played chess all the time.
Do you always know what your next move is even before I move?
Yes.
How do you do it?
When it comes to chess, you are very predictable, but only in chess. Protect your queen.
I know that. Why do you do that?
What?
Giving you advice. You always do that.
I like a good challenger. You're the only one I know who can be that.
Do you still play chess with your grandfather?
No. He died last year. Cancer.
Oh, sorry. What about your father?
You're 5 moves away from checkmate. My father?
Yeah. How does it work with your father?
We don't talk that much. He works for the State Department and spends a lot of time in Europe these days. Look at the whole board, James. It helps to make things clear for you. Close your eyes.
What? Why should I do that?
Just do it, James.
Okay, okay.
Think about the chessboard. Where are all the pieces?
James stares at the board. He even stands up and looks at the board from a few different angles. James then slowly sits down. After giving the board one more glance, James cracks a very small, almost imperceptible smile.
Okay.
The Evans Gambit. Very interesting. Okay, stop. Now, do you see what I mean about looking at the whole board? Call it perspective and anticipation. What about your father?
Ugh, he's a real SOB. What else do you want to know? And yes, I do know about Captain William Davies Evans, the first player known to have employed it.
Seems like you never talked to him. Both of you are always so formal with each other. Yes, you're right, by the way. Evans did invent that move. But rather than defending his own position, Black offers a counter-sacrifice for his queen, the rook, with tempo.
You're right. I need to keep my eye on the whole board. Just like politics.
Yeah, like life.
And back in Professor Hopkins' American Lit class...
Fahrenheit 451 doesn't provide a single clear explanation of why books are banned in the future. Instead, it suggests that many different factors could combine to create this result. Mr. Kennedy, what does censorship mean to you?
The primary debate concerning censorship lies in whether it is necessary to protect an audience from harmful material.
Okay, interesting. But what about how people act like lemmings and just follow everyone else?
I think that censorship fosters conformity of thought by suppressing material that some find objectionable. Now, Professor, do you think that is why Professor Loomis has banned some books in his class?
Or perhaps, Mr. Wheaton, it could be a matter of academic freedom. Teachers are free to use the materials they think are most appropriate to achieve their course objectives. I am sure you understand the difference?
Yes, I do. But what's the difference, then, between censorship and selecting the most appropriate materials?
Mr. Wheaton, you tell me. That is precisely the crux of the matter. You will never know what will become the inflammatory book.
But sir, isn't it possible that there will be people who will always find a problem with something and then make it an issue?
Yes, of course, exactly. You will never know what will become an inflammatory book or statement. It is always possible that some people will ignore the big picture and focus in on some small piece.
Looking at the whole chessboard, no one piece, or even 5 moves later, should be overlooked. Is that right?
Ah, another correlation to chess, Mr. Kennedy. But you are absolutely correct.
Professor Hopkins, I think we are missing one very important piece.
What might that be?
Our own newspaper here at Danforth has just been censored, and I don't understand how you could have been part of that.
Oh, yes, Mr. Wheaton, that is true. I am an employee here, and Dr. Wheaton is my boss.
Yes, we all know that, Professor. Everyone.
And what's your point, Mr. Wheaton?
I have no point to make, Professor. You've already made it.
We all have our points to make. We'll continue our 451 discussion tomorrow.
Mrs. Breckenridge, what are you doing here?
David Kennedy is going to Boys State, and not you.
Oh, you knew all along, didn't you?
No, I just found out. But, just between us, you should be going.
Is there anything you don't know about?
I don't think that's possible.
Mrs. Breckenridge, David deserves to go. You know, I'll have my own place in time to get to the State House at Boys State.
James, I'm sure you will. No doubt about it. And not just at Boys State. Governor, let me be the first to offer my congratulations to you.
Madam Chief Justice, thank you. You know, Catherine, you always seemed to know what I was going to do, didn't you?
James, yes, we all did.
And how did you know that?
Two reasons. One, you always cared about people and looked out for their welfare before your own.
And two,
you always looked at the whole chessboard and saw things 5 moves away. And you still do. The State House will not be your last political stopping place.
Catherine, I don't know about that, but what I do know is that there is much to be done for everyone, especially with you, Catherine Breckenridge, as our Chief Justice.
And with you, James, as Governor.
This has been the world premiere of The State House, The High School Years, written by Stephen Brown and Michael Alstrup. Our director today was Dan Sticca. As always, the award-winning WGTD Radio Theater featured members of the 91.1 Players. Our stars were Ryan Farrell as the young James Wheaton, Byron Huesdens as Dr. Thomas Wheaton, and also as Governor James Wheaton, Rob Lamont as Professor Jeffrey Hopkins, and also as Jonathan Wheaton, and Terry Lawler as the narrator. Other actors in today's show were Jim Blair, Victoria Dumay, Suzanne Wilczek, Kyle Farrell. Special effects were performed by Barb Tyla. Our audio director was Terry Steele. Production assistance provided by Michael Heigel, Matt Davidson, and Michael Ulstrup. The producer of the WGTD Radio Theater is Jim Blair. The executive producers of the WGTD Radio Theater are Michael Ulstrup and Steve Brown. And me, I'm Julie White, your host for today's Radio Theater broadcast. Generous support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Westosha Veterinary Hospital, located on Highway 50 in Salem. Ray Radigan's, your place for fine food, quality prepared and proudly served since 1933, located in Pleasant Prairie. The Kenosha Law Firm of O'Connor, Dumay, Aaliyah, and McTernan. And finally, the Agape Chiropractic Center in Lake Villa, Illinois. On Saturday, April 28th at 11:15, be sure to join us for an original adaptation of H.G. Wells' The Time Machine. This is WGTD, 91.1 FM, Kenosha Racine, NPR News, Classical Music, and Old Time Radio on your gateway to public radio. This is Julie White thanking you for joining us this morning for the world premiere of The State House, The High School Years, written by Stephen Brown and Michael Ulstrup.
Red Norville was perhaps second only to Lionel Hampton as a vibes player in the 30s and 40s. His wife, vocalist Mildred Bailey, was in the same league as Ella, according to some. Remembering Red and Mildred on this week's Saturday Night Bandstand. Support comes from Andrea's, Kenosha's hometown store since 1911, celebrating life's special occasions.
WGTD-FM 91.1, Kenosha Racine, quality public radio from Gateway Technical College.
In Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Iran's ambassador to Russia says the 15 British sailors and Marines held by Iran could be tried for violating international law. NPR's Rob Gifford has more from London.
Iran's state news agency quoted the Iranian diplomat speaking to a Russian television channel. He's quoted saying that if there is enough evidence of their guilt, it's possible that the British personnel will go on trial for taking what he called this illegal action of entering into Iranian waters. The British government says the 14 men and one woman were in Iraqi waters when they were detained 8 days ago. Britain's Foreign Secretary Margaret Beckett said today she'd sent a reply to an Iranian note regarding the 15 personnel. Beckett told reporters at an EU meeting in Bremen, Germany, "We've made our response and we're now beginning to discuss." EU foreign ministers declared their unconditional backing for Britain yesterday, and EU foreign policy chief Javier Solana is contacting Tehran to seek their immediate release. Rob Gifford, NPR News, London.
President Bush issued scathing criticism of Congress for passing emergency war spending bills that he says he intends to veto. In his weekly radio address today, the president said he opposed a deadline for withdrawing troops from Iraq.
Each of the Democrats' bills would substitute the judgment of politicians in Washington for that of our generals on the ground. Each bill would impose restrictive conditions on our military commanders. Each bill would also set an arbitrary deadline for surrender and withdrawal in Iraq. And I believe that would have disastrous consequences for our safety here at home.
But an Iraq War veteran who delivered the Democratic Party's message criticized the Bush administration's policies in Iraq as a failure. He said the administration needs to be held accountable. The president of the Ontario-based pet food company Menu Foods says products made by his company are now safe. This week, the FDA said the tainted wet style of pet food that was the subject of a massive recall contained an ingredient used to make plastic. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
Melamine is also used as a fertilizer in some South Asian countries. FDA officials say, however, that it's not clear if the melamine is what caused the deaths and illnesses of pets in the U.S. and Canada. Menu Foods recalled about 60 million cans and pouches of its cuts and gravy-style dog and cat food after at least 16 pets died and an unknown number of others suffered kidney failure. Paul Henderson, the head of Menu Foods, says it's not clear how melamine found its way into an ingredient used in making the pet foods. Another chemical used in rat poison was also identified as being present in some of the samples. Henderson says the contamination was found in wheat gluten from a supplier in China, one which his company no longer deals with. Although only 16 pet deaths have been confirmed, there are fears that the actual number could be in the hundreds. For NPR News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
From Washington, this is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from ABMP, whose massage professionals believe everyone deserves a massage. Therapists nationwide are on Massage Finder at massagetherapy.com.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Edgewater Hotel located in downtown Madison. The Edgewater features lakefront guest rooms and suites, indoor parking, plus lakeside dining for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and Sunday brunch. Menus, photos, and reservations online at theedgewater.com.
There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. The corn is as high as an elephant's arm, and it looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky.